My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. I'm Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth and beyond. Before you know it, your baby is here. And then your mind quickly switches to consider how to look after your new baby as well as possible. A key part of this is learning what is and is not normal, so you can seek support as early as possible to help keep your baby healthy. I'm really looking forward to speaking today with Dr. Lily, who is a pediatric registrar with lots of experience caring for newborn babies and supporting parents to look after their little ones in the healthiest way. Welcome, Lily, and thank you so much for joining me because I know you have just finished a run of night shifts, so you are an absolute hero for spreading even more of your wisdom.
That's all right, yeah. I had a little bit of a nap before I came on, so I'm feeling much brighter now.
Naps and caffeine, that is the way to go, isn't it? It is the
only
way.
You've got to kind of switch yourself back, so I'm on... I'm doing a clinic tomorrow morning, so I've got to kind of...
Oh, it's so hard, isn't it? It's absolutely brutal on your body clock. So thank you. We will jump straight in so we can get all of the good stuff from you. But before we do, Lily, I would love to know kind of what's led you to work with babies and little people.
So I am a pediatric registrar, which... kind of for everyone else listening means that I'm often the most senior person in the hospital, but the consultants are the kind of true bosses. So I've had about 10 years experience now as a doctor. I've completed all my pediatric exams, but pediatrics as a training program is an 8-year long process. So you start as a kind of junior doctor and you come out as a consultant, and somewhere in the middle you become a registrar. And every 6 months we change jobs and we do lots of different things. So you do a bit of general pediatrics, and as part of your training, you do neonatal medicine as both a junior doctor and a more senior doctor. So I'm currently working as a registrar in neonatal intensive care, but we also cover labor ward deliveries, postnatal care, and that's in a kind of big hospital. We cover cardiac center, so heart center as well, and we go out and retrieve babies from lots of the smaller hospitals in the region and bring them back to us so that we can give them specialist care. I'm doing that for 6 months, but I've also previously done a year of that as a more junior doctor, so that is why I'm kind of doing neonatal and baby medicine at the moment. But I have also in my training done pediatric intensive care. I've done some pediatric surgical training. I've also done quite a lot of general pediatrics. And the last year I actually have spent some time abroad doing voluntary roles and working with refugees and doing teaching in Africa and really interesting things, which I have always wanted to do. So yeah, I've had a very varied career so far. And my aim is at the end of all of this, I'd love to do pediatric emergency medicine. So specializing and working in a pediatric A&E department. But I'm just drawing on all the experience I can right now to get me there.
Oh, amazing. I mean, so inspirational that actually you've done such a wide variety, both, you know, here in the UK, but also taken your skills and expertise abroad. So well done you. There's lots of little people benefiting. And it means that for me and everybody listening, we're in great hands asking you all these questions today. So everyone should be getting their notepads at the ready for sure. Now, I know, Lee, when people have a baby, you know, there are so many worries because they can't communicate with us. They're so little, so precious, so vulnerable. What are some of the key things that you recommend parents can look out for in their new baby as a sign that actually things are going well and they can be reassured and their baby is thriving?
Yeah, I think you're so right. Like that, even for medical professionals, you know, midwives, nurses, doctors, when you have a baby, it is so overwhelming. And although I haven't had my own children yet, my sister has children, my husband's sister has children, loads of my friends have had children. And that is actually one of the reasons that I set up my Instagram page in the first place, was that my friends and family were constantly asking me when they had a baby, you know, Lils, what's normal? What's not normal? Is this okay? And sending me pictures of various things. And I think it is really difficult because newborns only do a certain amount of stuff. You know, they sleep for the majority of the time and you're watching them sleep thinking, is, you know, are they sleeping normally? Is that movement normal? Is that not normal? Then they feed and they wee and they poo, and that's pretty much all they do. But they can do it in a million different ways. And so I think a lot of people find themselves staring at those things and thinking, you know, is this a normal for this? Is this not? Yeah, so there's only so many things you can actually look at to reassure yourself that things are going well or things are not going well. But actually, if your baby is doing all those things successfully, they're probably doing pretty well. So if, you know, if you're managing to get them to go down and have some sleep, if they're going to the toilet regularly and that's all looks normal, if they're feeding well and putting on weight and gaining weight over time, I think that's one of the biggest things. You know, the reason that they sleep so much and feed so much is because they're developing and they're growing and they're trying to put on weight and develop their brains and their organs, and therefore if they're not feeding, if they're not sleeping, then they're going to struggle to do those things. So I think feeding is like possibly the biggest thing that is noticeable. But also there are a few things that you can look out for in terms of when maybe something isn't quite right. But they are really variable. And sometimes I feel like even when I give advice about things to look out for, those things can still be normal. So it's really difficult to say 100% with a newborn baby, you know, if this happens with their breathing, then you need to go to hospital, because it is so variable with each baby. But if your baby is managing to feed, sleep, wee, poo, you know, and there's nothing else particularly that is worrying you about them, then they're probably doing pretty well. Even though you probably feel knackered because when they sleep, you're not sleeping. And when they're feeding, you want to be sleeping or whatever.
Always the way, I know. And the most unhelpful advice ever for a new mum is sleep when the baby sleeps. That one always drives me insane. I'm like, if only I could sleep in the middle of the road when I'm pushing my baby in a pram, or, you know, they're in the carrier. But I think it's useful because there's so much, isn't there? There's so much information, so much overwhelm and learning in that newborn period. So to actually break that up into, are they feeding regularly? Are they having regular wet and dirty nappies? You know, are they sleeping and having periods of seeming quite settled and happy? If you can just remember those three things, so when you are having those moments of doubt, you can kind of almost tick them off in your head as a bit of a kind of checklist. That's some really nice instant reassurance. So that's, I think, really helpful to keep it simple. We can overcomplicate so much, can't we? Sometimes stripping is the best.
And I think the other thing is that, you know, babies can't communicate with us. As you said, they can't tell you how you're feeling or when they're feeling good and when they're not feeling so good. The only way they communicate with you is by crying. And so I see a lot of new parents who sometimes bring their children to hospital, and I'm not saying this is wrong, this is totally understandable, but because they're crying and maybe they've decided to cry for the last 4 hours, and as a new parent you're thinking, they're trying to tell me something, but I don't know what they're trying to tell me. Is there something wrong? Maybe there's something wrong. And I think if you're not sure, then getting them checked out is completely fine. And I often say, you know, don't worry about the fact that you've brought them to hospital, but I can tell you that actually they're just learning how to communicate with you. And this period of crying is normal. and maybe they've just found their voice and actually they've been quite settled up to this point in the first few days of life. But on day five, they decided that they're going to be more awake and they're going to cry a lot. But they can't tell you whether that cry is because they're just a bit hungry or that cry is because actually I'm feeling really poorly. And that's really difficult, I think, as a new sleep deprived parent to try and work out.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness, it is. And it's such a pressure, isn't it? Because all you want to do is protect them and make sure they're well, and that's your kind of primary role. And it's so emotive having that, you know, new baby that you're entirely responsible for. So yeah, like you say, always better to get that reassurance, because no one's going to sleep anyway if your baby's up crying and you're up worrying. So you may as well get that kind of reassurance from those who know. Now, what are some of the signs or symptoms then that parents can look out for, Lily, that actually perhaps their baby is unwell or there is something that needs some medical attention?
So I think, again, like I would say that these are probably all quite variable. And although I will highlight a few things, if your baby has this, don't instantly think that there must be something wrong with him.
Yes.
But if they do have these, it might be something that you want to go and get checked out. I think the first one is breathing. So we see quite a lot of babies who are maybe working harder with their breathing more quickly than you would expect, or breathing irregularly. And again, in the first couple of weeks of life, babies don't breathe totally regularly all the time. And it does vary night and day, and when they're awake and when they're feeding. And also their chest walls are very stretchy. Their ribs aren't fully solid yet. So even the slightest change, you can see some quite profound differences with how they breathe. But we tend to advise that if babies, you think your baby is breathing very fast, and babies do breathe faster than us as adults anyway, so they will tend to breathe about twice the speed, if not three times the speed that we breathe as adults. So you can't really compare your breathing to theirs, but if they are breathing, you know, more than one breath per second, for instance, that is fast for a baby. And that may be a sign of something more serious going on. And the things we worry about most are things like infection, or some babies transition more slowly to the outside world. They're used to being inside, and so their lungs can be a little bit full of fluid for the first few days. And some babies struggle with that more than others. So breathing fast, then struggling to breathe. So they may be breathing a normal rate, but actually you think that they're really sucking in their ribs, or they're really sucking in up here in their throat, their trachea, or they're making added noises with their breathing. And again, I think that can be quite tricky, because some babies are a little bit snorty, a little bit snuffly, and in the first few days they can be a bit mucousy. But if they are making a consistent noise when they are breathing on almost every breath over a period of time, then that is not normal and should be at least assessed by someone who does know 100% what is normal and what is not. So I think breathing is certainly one. The other thing I think that parents should be aware of is that all babies vomit. There's a variation of what is normal and what's not with vomiting. And actually, to have a little bit of vomiting after a feed, or what we call positing, is normal. And most babies, you know, you're on a fully milk diet, you're laid flat most of your life, some of it is going to come up again. But if your baby is vomiting a lot, all of their feeds, or the vomit is green, bright green, then again, that's not normal and can be a sign of something more serious going on, be that infection or a problem in the gut itself, in the intestines itself. And so if you're worried about the level that they're vomiting or the colour of their vomit, then get that checked out. And then I think the last main one I would touch on is kind of sleepiness which again, so difficult. And I really feel for parents sometimes that I say, you know, bring them back if they're a bit sleepy, because you think, well, they sleep anyway most of the time. 90% of their life they're asleep, so newborns are sleepy, but they should wake up every 2 to 4 hours for a feed. They should be willing to have a feed. You know, they may miss one, or they may not be that interested in one, but if they're not waking up consistently for feeds, or you can't rouse them, then that is an unusual level of sleepiness. And I think the first few days of life can be quite tricky for that, because babies don't get into a pattern necessarily. But if by day 3 or 4, they're not starting to wait for feeds, then that would be a bit of a red flag for me. And it can be something as simple as they're a little bit jaundiced, and maybe it's very easy to fix, but it also can be a sign, again, of more serious things like infection that actually need hospital treatment. So yeah, I think sleepiness is a big one. Sleepiness, breathing, and vomiting.
Yeah.
Although there are, you know, there's lots of other signs, but I think those ones are the key ones that if you're going to focus on knowing a little bit about what to look out for, I think those are important.
Those, yeah, definitely, absolutely. And I think what's reassuring for parents is actually often if there is a problem, one of those things impacts something else. So you kind of end up with a couple of red flags, don't you? Like if they're vomiting all their feeds, or they're overly sleepy and not waking, then that's when you might see some excessive weight loss and things like that. So actually then you kind of build up this picture. But, you know, parents' instincts are so incredibly powerful, and often you'll know if actually you think your baby is working harder to breathe that day than they have normally, or, you know, they're normally really feisty and all of a sudden they're just not bothered about engaging in anything. You'll kind of get to know them, but I guess the difficult thing is that can take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And so that initial period.
Yeah, that first week is challenging. I think once they're a month old, I always trust the parents' instincts. You know, sometimes we'll get parents who bring their babies in anything up to a few weeks after birth, and they kind of say, you know, they're just not themselves, there's something wrong, I don't know what it is, but they're not right. And I take that very seriously, and I would say 90% of the time when a parent tells me that, there is something going on, we just have to find it. But I think that first few weeks where you actually don't know 100% what your baby's normal is, and they're still working it out,
yeah,
it's really hard. And I would never criticize anyone for coming in or calling, you know, the GP, the midwife, to ask, because there's no such thing as a silly question in those first few weeks, because every baby is different and what's normal for one might be not normal for another, and you're not expected to know everything.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a first-time mum and you've got nothing to compare it to from last time.
Absolutely. It's a bit like I say to women in pregnancy with, you know, concerns about babies' movements, we'd rather see you 100 times and reassure you and not miss something than the other way around. And I guess it's kind of the same in that initial period, isn't it, for parents that are unsure but getting to know their little one. Actually, just erring on that side of caution is totally reasonable.
Yeah. And I often find that when you do come into hospital, we have slightly magic doors and the babies come in and parents will say, oh, they've cried for the last 12 hours at home.
Yeah.
And now they've come here, they're on the breast having a feed, looking lovely. And I'd examine them and I think, well, they look pretty beautiful. And the parents are saying, oh, they weren't like this at home, I promise. And I always say, I'd much rather see you here. And actually, it's lovely for me to see the occasional healthy, normal newborn baby and be able just to reassure you and send you away. But actually, because the signs can be so subtle, if there is something wrong, I would rather catch it early and be able to fully fix it than you being sat at home for the next 12 hours worrying about it, you know, touch on this later, but googling things, trying to find out, is this normal, is this not? And then actually your baby's really sick, and by the time they do come into hospital, it ends up being a bit more traumatic because we have to do more for them.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Like you say, you know, there's no point in you being awake all night, Lily, if parents are sat at home worrying with a potentially unwell baby, is there? So it's never a case. I know people worry about wasting time, don't they? Because they know that the NHS is under pressure, but actually your baby is so important that it's always, always better to be cautious. So Lily, what are some of the kind of common conditions that you tend to see in new babies with parents? And what should parents kind of do if they notice any of these?
So I think it kind of goes back to the symptoms we were talking about before. And actually those are the signs of the conditions that we probably see the most. So the biggest thing that I would want parents to pick up on is infection. And the signs of infection in newborn babies are really varied. But as you said before, often what happens is they get one thing, and then because of that one thing, it affects other things. So they might become a little bit more sleepy, and then because they're more sleepy, they're not waking to feed. Because they're not feeding, they're not weeing. And so although it maybe starts with a very subtle sign, after a short period of time, you'll find that actually there's a few different signs that alert you to the fact that your baby's not quite right. And the problem is, in the first 12 weeks of life, babies don't have a great immune system. They're still developing it. And most babies haven't had any, you know, vaccinations until they're 8 weeks old. So they're relying entirely on the antibodies that they've got from mum during pregnancy. And also the barriers between their skin, blood and brain are a little bit more fluid than when you get older. So the chances of infection actually spreading through the body or to the brain, which we call meningitis, but is more likely, which is why we worry about it more. So if your baby is only a few days old and they have a temperature, that's actually quite a worrying sign, because it may be that they have an infection. And if they have an infection, unlike you or me, who would probably just get a cold and fight it off in a few days and be fine, they don't have that level of immune system there to protect them. So they're more at risk of getting really sick. And it doesn't mean that they will get really sick, but any baby who has an infection less than 12 weeks, we just take it quite seriously. And we will tend to do blood tests, put a drip in, give antibiotics, because as you said, you know, they're very, very precious, and it's just better safe than sorry. And so I think infection is one thing we see quite commonly, and that can be an infection that's actually been passed from mum to baby in the birth process, or can be that they've gone home and that their lovely, you know, four-year-old sibling has come home from school with XYZ and, you know, a simple kiss and a cuddle, unfortunately, which you can't stop from happening, has made baby unwell. But the signs of infection that you're going to look out for are being sleepy, any breathing concerns, any temperature above 38 in a baby less than 12 weeks old needs to be seen by a health professional. And if you just feel your baby's not right and someone else in the house is unwell, you know, get them checked out. So infection is a big one. I think the other things that we see really commonly in newborns are jaundice. So, you know, jaundice is where most babies are born with too many red blood cells. They get a bit of a surge of red blood cells when they're born, and then they have to break down those red blood cells and start making their own. And as a byproduct of that, you produce a pigment, which is called bilirubin, but it stains your skin, eyes, etc., a little bit yellow. So most people will know that a baby who looks a bit yellow, maybe a bit jaundiced, but that's kind of the process going on behind the scenes. And for most babies, it's not a problem and they will just resolve it on their own. But for the occasional baby, that it will be so significant that actually the products of the breakdown cross into the brain and cause problems. They become more sleepy, more drowsy, they stop feeding, and then we start going down that vicious cycle that we were talking about of when they don't feed, they become sleepy, then they don't feed, then they don't wee, etc. And some babies will need to have a bit of treatment for jaundice, and that can be a little bit of phototherapy. So we shine a UV light at them and it helps them break down those byproducts. All the way up to some babies may need a blood transfusion if they're really, really unwell. But picking up jaundice early and getting it checked by the midwife, they can do a very simple test to work out if the level of jaundice is worrying or not. And if it is so high that they're a bit worried, they'll send you in to us and we will do a formal blood test and check. And if we need to start that treatment, we can start it. So that's another really common one. And I think the last one is something I could talk about for probably hours on a podcast, but I see a lot of parents with this combination of either reflux, colic, constipation. And I would say, I don't know if you remember at school, but you get those Venn diagrams, which are the circles which overlap. And I think a really helpful way of thinking about all those like feeding related or tummy related problems are that they're each a thing in their own right. So reflux is a thing, colic is a thing, constipation is a thing. But most babies don't conform to just having one or the other. And quite a lot of them will end up overlapping and actually having signs and symptoms of both or all three if they're really unlucky. And it can be quite complicated to manage those things. But the main symptoms are that your baby's really unsettled around feeding or they vomit a lot after they're fed. And that can impact on weight gain. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just that they're really unsettled. But actually, if you're worried about their feeding or you're worried that they're not gaining weight, then getting help and advice from the right person early is important, because I think that whole topic of colic and reflux is one that, yeah, as I said, you could talk about for ages, but it's probably the most difficult for parents to manage, because it's the one where your baby is really unsettled and you're not sleeping very well and you're constantly worrying about whether they're getting enough food in and out. You know, you will pick up that your baby has an infection and you'll be in hospital and they'll get treatment, and in a week's time they'll be better. And although it's really stressful at the time, we can manage it really effectively. Whereas colic and reflux and constipation, they're just a bit more complicated. And unfortunately, we don't have a magic wand that we can wave and just fix it. And you'll probably get lots of different opinions and advice from different people, which I think can be quite challenging. So,
yeah, definitely. And also, I think because often, you know, the spectrum of symptoms can be quite vague and, like you say, very much overlap, you often don't really know which of those you are really trying to navigate. But as a parent, all you know is that your baby's really uncomfortable and you want to fix that. And that's really, really hard, isn't it? I totally agree. It's like a whole nother beast of...
We could do two podcasts probably on...
I know, yeah, yeah, we absolutely could. Because like you say, it's so tough for parents. So, so tough and so emotionally draining and exhausting. So definitely, if you are someone that's suffering with that, it's really important that you get support from professionals, but also from peers, I think, from other mums that have experienced it or are going through it, for that kind of emotional support and to actually recognise that it's okay to find that really hard, because it is really hard. And like you say, unfortunately, it's not kind of quick fix like it might be with kind of other things. So, but I love that just listening to you speak through those things, Lily, actually it all comes back to those same issues, doesn't it? The same three things that you can have in the back of your mind as a new parent when you're kind of thinking about how your baby's doing, which I love, because keeping it simple is just the way forward. You almost want parents to have a little post-it note somewhere, don't you? Just with those three things on, so you can be like, yes, we're good, we're good, we're good.
I always say that in medicine, keep it simple, stupid. Don't make it too complicated, because actually if you make it too complicated, it becomes overwhelming. Whereas if you know just a few simple signs to look out for, and again, like we could touch on this, but where to go for help if you're worried about those things,
yeah,
then you're going to pick up 99% of the times that your baby is not right.
Absolutely. Oh, 100%. Now, Lily, I could talk to you all night, but you actually do need to get some sleep at some point. Now, everyone that comes on the podcast, I ask for 3 top tips. So I wonder if you could share your 3 top tips with us on this topic.
So I think I was thinking about this before we started chatting. I think my 3 things probably are try before you have your baby, you know, in those last few weeks, maybe when you've finished work or you're winding down, try and do a little bit of reading, a little bit of research as to what is normal, or ask your friends or family who have babies, you know, what to expect. Because I think when you have your first baby, especially, you don't have that experience of knowing what's normal and what's not. And if you can access just a little bit of reliable information about how much babies sleep, what babies' wee and poo looks like, because it doesn't look like ours.
Yeah.
what babies' heart rate and breathing rate is, because again, it's not the same as ours as adults. I think that's actually really empowering to know. And think about all the times that you've spent time with your sister's babies or your friend's babies, you know, what their normal was. And reach out and try and create a little bit of a network for yourself for when your baby is born, be that a antenatal group, WhatsApp, or, you know, a bit of an online Instagram page or Facebook group, just somewhere that you feel you can get some reliable support about what's normal and not. So I think learn about what's normal. And number 2 is kind of know where to go for advice once your baby's born. So unfortunately in the NHS right now, sorry, my cat's food.
That's all right. We welcome everyone on the podcast. We don't discriminate.
Know where to go for help. There's a lot of information out there and not all of it is perfect. But we do have access to a huge amount of information just on our phones and our computers, which actually is great. You just have to kind of know where to go. I find that in the NHS, we discharge people very quickly now from hospital after having a baby. You know, my grandma always says to me, oh, well, I spent 2 weeks in hospital after I had a baby. And I think, well, you might be lucky to get 2 days in hospital now. And although the midwives and paediatricians are really knowledgeable, unfortunately, we can't spend an hour by your bedside teaching you about everything that is normal because it's just so busy. So you're not going to get a huge amount in that very short period when you actually give birth.
Yeah.
So having, you know, the leaflets, looking on the wall in the maternity ward, there's loads of things. There's loads of websites that are really helpful. NHS website is pretty good. And then you'll have your midwife's phone number, a call number, and they will pop in and see you on, you know, day 3 and 5. And you'll have a little bit of access. So use it. If you are not sure, use it. Don't feel like you're asking a silly question when your midwife does come out to weigh your baby. Don't think, oh, they're in a rush, they need to get to that person, you know, I'm not going to ask that. Or you might think, oh no, I've forgotten what I was going to ask earlier and now I feel embarrassed because I can't remember. Just give them a call later and say, I just wanted to ask, is this okay? What should I do if this happens? Use the educated people you have around you and the resources you have around you. And number 3 would be, it's really hard, but try not to randomly Google too much. Don't get pulled into the random Google.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's one of the reasons that I did start my Instagram page, is that there are so many kind of slightly dubious resources online that I just wanted to provide, like you, a little bit more of kind of reliable advice from someone who actually does the job. And if you stick to the resources that you found when you're on labor ward or your midwife-led unit or from your midwife, then you'll be fine. But just in the middle of the night, it's so easy when your baby is doing a funny breathing thing to think, I'm just going to Google, what's a funny breathing thing in a baby?
Yeah.
And then you end up down a rabbit hole of a million YouTube videos or something that says your baby probably has cancer and they're going to die. And then you're thinking, oh, my God.
I don't We've know all done do it, that. Haven't we? We've done it with ourselves.
Even well, I do like, it. Yeah, exactly. As a doctor, sometimes I think, I don't know the answer to that. I'll just have a look online. But I do have the knowledge and the training to be like, when I'm reading something, this is rubbish. This is not evidence, you know. Or this is Wikipedia, I'm not sure it's properly referenced. And I know the good websites to look at that I do trust, that I'll think, yes, okay, that's nice guidance, that's NHS, and lots of people have reviewed this and I know that it will be reliable. But for most people, you're not going to have that. You're going to end up on Instagram with some mum somewhere in the US who says that this is not normal, you should go to hospital immediately. So try not to go down the scroll lane. So know what's normal, know what's not, know where to go for help. And nothing is a stupid question. Ask anyone in the hospital or at home, especially your midwives, because they know. And if they don't know, they will go and find out for you from a reliable source as opposed to the internet.
The Google rabbit hole at 2 a.m.
The Google rabbit hole.
Oh, Lily, thank you so much. I think that was really, really reassuring, I hope, for anyone listening who is thinking, I just don't know what to look out for. And you find yourself, like you say, completely all consumed sometimes in an overwhelming amount of information that you're trying to sift through. But actually breaking it down into Lily's kind of key steps, key pieces of advice is really, really helpful and reassuring. So thank you for sharing so much of your wonderful wisdom with us.
That's been nice. Thank you.
Before I head off, I need to tell you something. 68% of you who listen to my show have not hit the subscribe button. So can you do me a favour? And if you've ever enjoyed listening, hit subscribe now. It makes a huge difference, helping me to keep bringing you episodes. And together, we can then reach and empower more women on this journey. If you are a pregnant or newly postpartum listener and are looking to have the healthiest, most positive and informed journey, then my exclusive Your Pregnancy and Your Postnatal Journey courses may be for you. I work with a select number of women in a bespoke way, with unlimited access to me and my expert team for the most transformative level of support at this important time in your life. We only get one shot at getting this time right. So to get in touch and find out more, head to midwifepip.com.